Thank you very much. Hello and welcome, everyone. You're listening to the Pacifica National Board Programming Committee meeting of March 19th. And I'm Catherine, Chair, our Vice Chair, Eric Ramey, and Secretary, Jim Dingman. I'm going to call the roll officially. Grace Aaron.
Here.
Thank you. Ken Aaron.
Here.
Catherine Davis is present. Jim Dingman.
Here.
Eric Ramey.
I'm present.
Cliff Smith.
Here.
Tom Voorhees.
Here.
And Maxie Jackson.
Present.
Okay. Is there anyone else who's on the call whose name I haven't called? Benito Diaz? Anissa Faruqi? Steve Pride? No? Okay. So we have quorum. And so we will appoint a timekeeper. So, Eric?
So moved.
All
right. Oh, accepted. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, and we have one set of minutes to approve changes or additions to the agenda.
Yes, Kathy?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'd like to just have 10 minutes at some point to talk about this Unlocking the Podcast Mainstream event I went to in March, March 5th. Maybe just 10 minutes to just give a quick summary of what I experienced there.
Unlocking the Podcast
Mainstream. Yeah, it was a business-oriented event on podcasting.
Okay, 10 minutes. Okay. That was Jim Dingman. Okay.
This is Max. Okay. I haven't seen the agenda. Can that be forwarded to my attention, please?
I think what I did is I sent out the same agenda from the last meeting. I'm not able to get online while I am.
I can send it right now. Is it ED?
Okay.
I'll send it right now.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate that. Okay. And then we have a time certain. No, that was the last meeting. And so we have a report on the podcast summit already here and adjourn at 11 p.m. So is there something else to add to this agenda? We were going to talk about how we're going to present or if we're going to present this information to the next committee.
Catherine, this is Eric. Can I go to the stack? Just a second.
Yes, Eric.
It occurs to me that, at the risk of sounding crass, whatever is not completed at the end of this panel, I'm not sure it's in our purview to transfer our work to a different, to an incoming group, or even that it's appropriate. It should probably be reintroduced. That would be a better route to go. I mean, simply.
Okay, so why don't we decide that? Okay. Is it appropriate to transfer motions to next committee? Okay. All right. So we add that to the agenda. Anyone else want to add something to the agenda?
Maxie, did you want to talk about cabs?
I can talk about cabs, and I have a couple other items I can just update committee about.
Okay, so I'll put down update from...
You can put me towards the back end of the agenda, though, if
you'd like. Okay, that sounds great. Anyone else want to add anything to the agenda?
Yeah, this is Ken to the stack. If we could get a brief summary from the ED, because he's got oversight over the five stations, of any changes in programming that have occurred recently, actual changes, so that we could be apprised of that.
Maxie, are you able to add that to your update?
No, I'm not.
But up front.
There's nothing, I would argue there's nothing substantial that would be in my understanding, as in like a format change. There's nothing like that that has occurred. There are small programming changes here and there, but nothing I would say raises to the level that I can think of. The only thing I'll update perhaps, I think most of this committee heard what I said to the national board about my conversation with Democracy Now! About a promotional strategy. But other than that, I don't think there's much to report that on that area.
Okay. All right. Anyone else want to add something to the agenda?
Well, I was wondering if Maxie could talk about, has he seen any improvement in Nielsen ratings or other metrics in the five stations? What, you know, whatever opinion he has about that.
What I'll do is...
Okay,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what I can do is update you all on some of the things I've discussed with the PDs specifically, so that you can understand some of the, I won't say direction, but the points of emphasis with them. And it does include things like the CAB. It includes conversations about syndication, about membership in the greater public, and how they should be taking advantage of those assets. So I can share some of the conversation that I've had with them. I actually had a conference call with them this morning, so I can.
Okay, that sounds great. Whatever is possible would be
that's
great.
Fine.
Okay, so excellent. So has everyone? Are there any other changes to the agenda?
Yes,
Maxie, have you received the? I'm sorry, Maxie, did you get?
Email? I have.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Catherine, I would just like to talk about maybe 10 minutes about. I got reelected, so bringing on a different kind of expert opinion going forward. What people's thoughts are of that. In other words, bring guests in to talk to us about, you know, technicalities of podcasting, all that kind of stuff. And frankly, I think it would be useful to have the local stations create carts advertising the fact that the listeners should listen to these kind of discussions and give us their input. So I want to talk about that.
Okay, but keep in mind that's something that you would have to be on the next committee to bring to the next committee, right?
Correct.
It's not
correct,
something
correct,
that we would act on. All right.
No, I realize that, but I just want to sort of, do some brain, hit the idea around.
Okay. All right. Any other changes? Okay, hearing none. Unless I've left something out, we had the roll call, timekeeper, approved minutes, changes to the agenda, and those changes are unlocking the podcast mainstream. Is it appropriate to transfer our work to the next committee? I have that 20-minute discussion, discussion on bringing in experts, and then an update from the ED, adjourn at 11 p.m. or sooner. So any objections to this agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. So we have minutes. Jim, what minutes did you bring to the table?
I finished December minutes, and I'll start, getting forward. I had to go in the hospital again. the past week, so I was a little bit detained with stuff. But I'll start moving forward and finish everything off as fast as I can.
Okay, so we might not have a committee to approve those minutes, but hopefully some of the same people will be on the board. So are there any objections to the minutes that have been presented? What date did you say they were? The 5th?
Middle of December.
The 5th?
Middle of December. That's around the time I got disrupted with all the medical bullshit.
Let's see. Okay, let me see if I can find it. So it's December 18th minutes.
Correct.
Okay. Are there any changes to these minutes or objections to accepting these minutes? Okay, hearing none, these minutes are approved. Okay, the next thing we have on our agenda is unlocking the podcast mainstream. You have 10 minutes, Jim.
Okay, as I mentioned before, I've been targeting the podcasting events in New York City, in particular, the ones I can go to, and there's always lots of them. This particular event is put on by an organization called Rain News, and it was held in Midtown Manhattan on March 5th, and it was sponsored by NPR and iHeartRadio. Now, what's interesting is it basically had business people and marketing people from all the major podcast distributors in the United States, which are NPR, iHeartRadio, Google was there, and other outfits were there. And one recommendation I would have going forward is to invite some of these people to participate in calls with folks here to sort of hear what they had to say. Now, one of the things that was interesting was, iHeart and NPR have the biggest amount of podcasts. They have basically the grip on the market. And what they're talking about is they're foreseeing in 2 to 3 years that the market for podcast revenue is going to go up 500%. So that means there's just going to be this huge explosion of podcasts. And in there were people from a place called, again, people familiar with podcasting know PodTrack sort of constantly keeps abreast of these issues. So PodTrack was talking about true crime podcasting, and what I found interesting in that was that most of the audience for that kind of podcast are female, and they were talking about the success of the podcast Serial, which, as you may know, has now been made into a 4-part series on HBO. They're talking about how the amount of podcasting has increased dramatically. Obviously, terrestrial radio still is the main purveyor of audio, but podcasting has increased exponentially. So they had somebody there from the Infinite Dial outfit, research, Tom Webster. He was talking about everything. And they had the president of NPR there, and they had people talking about how they're shaping the podcast in terms of the brands that they're marketing. So NPR has a complete outfit that just all they do is shape for underwriting purposes and business purposes and corporate underwriting and support. They completely create their own audio for that purpose. They had a guy there who is, again, somebody who would be an interesting person to contact. He's the editor. James Cridland is a Brit based in Australia. It turns out that he's a Pacifica radio listener, and he does called podnews.net, and he was sort of overseeing a panel that just talked about how you measure podcasts. You know, is it from downloads? How do you actually – they're talking about how you monetize, how you get metrics to monetize it, which is important for us to know and think about going forward with this. Another panel had something very interesting. that a woman based in New Haven, she was talking about how she's using podcasting to rebrand a company in Southern California that basically wants to clean up its act. It broke from Intel and wanted to create a podcast to basically advertise itself as the best cybersecurity company in the country. And so she created a podcast, and she went into some outfit in Canada, and they all they do is do branded podcasts for companies. There was a person from How Stuff Works. Some of the most interesting people were a guy from Google named Zach Renau Wieden, and another guy, and they were talking about how Google has jumped into this and how they're trying to essentially, you know, create this huge empire of podcasting. The one thing interesting is that they talked about the monetization of podcasting, and they were talking about how they're only interested in podcasts that have 30 to 50,000 downloads a month. They're not interested in podcasting, you know, it would be 2,000 to 3,000. Although there was another guy who came up who talked about how he just had been to another podcasting event in New York about 2 or 3 days beforehand. And out of the people coming to that podcast event, only less than 1% of them are monetized. So you have people coming in there who are spending the entire year creating podcasts, like creating a radio show, and they're trying to, you know, get financial support, and you know they're basically engaging in doing produced radio. And finally, there were iHeartMedia was interesting because how they introduced their podcast is they will broadcast a podcast series on all their about, let's say, several hundred radio stations or whatever amount they decide to do. And then they'll aim everybody to listen to the podcast, which serves as an interesting model for us if we decide to, you know, have people create podcast series, you know, maybe have them all advertise it once on a station and then have them distributed in a podcast mode. So it was overwhelming. There were 400 to 500 people there from all over the place. All the networks were there. All the major newspapers and print media that's going into podcasting are there. NPR, of course, has a big presence. And I would say that these kind of things moving forward are worth interacting with, along with all these other podcast kind of events that are different in tone, because we can all learn, we can sort of figure out what we're going to get from these creatively and sort of use for our own purposes in cybersecurity.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions or comments for Jim?
This is Maxie.
Okay. Maxie?
Mm-hmm. No, I just want to reinforce what Jim mentioned about bringing expertise to these calls and to other board, LSB, and staff-facing calls, conferences, meetings, etc. I think that the greater awareness we have of industry standard, industry trends, the better. And I would strongly reinforce what he said in terms of that.
Yeah, I should add this guy, James, Kathy. This guy, James Cridlin, who actually listens to WBAI, sort of cracked me up. And he has an international grasp of podcasting. So he would be probably an interesting contact person. I got his card. He'd be an interesting contact person to approach. And most everybody was pretty friendly. You know, most, of course, they didn't know what Pacifica was, except, of course, the older people did. And they were just curious. They were sort of saying, well, what are you doing here? I said, want you to learn. And I think that that is clearly what we can get from these kind of events.
Okay. That sounds great. Thank you. All right, so now we're up for our discussion on what to do with our body of work. So my concern primarily is with those motions that were passed by the programming committee. But I would like to take a stack on who would like to speak to how we want to handle those motions that have been passed and those motions that have yet to be passed. So who would like to speak first?
Kenneth, it's Eric, if I can go to Zach, if I may.
Okay, go ahead, Eric.
It may streamline or simplify. I'll just get your feedback and that from our colleagues here. If I just offer a motion to postpone this until the next meeting, do you feel that would be helpful? What was that word?
I mean, certainly it's fine to do that. I won't be at the next meeting. It'll be a new meeting. I don't know if you can pull, even doing that would be kicking the can down the road. Because we would have no control of what the next meeting is.
I think that's exactly my point, actually. We're serving a meal to someone who hasn't ordered anything. But
okay, I understand your motion. I would speak to the motion, but does anyone else second or speak to this motion?
Yes, Tom does, for sure.
Okay, Tom, go ahead.
Well, I think we ought to package these things up in some kind of reasonable form with the status of all of them. Also add the status passed on to the PN, to the PNB and that status, and put it all together in a package and send it to the make it available to whoever becomes the next programming committee.
Okay, you know? So you're speaking against postponing.
Correct.
Would anyone else like to speak for or against postponing?
This is Grace, this is Zach.
Go ahead, Grace.
What I'm hearing from you, Catherine, is that you want to be off this committee. Is that correct?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I may or may not be on the committee next time. I don't know because it's an election. For the committee.
Yeah.
So I'm not assuming anything, making an assumption.
Okay. In my experience, the election results just came out yesterday. Each signal area will have one local station board meeting soon to hopefully elect officers and elect PNB directors. It's doubtful that anything more will occur in that initial meeting of the new LSBs. I doubt that those LSBs will elect people to these committees. And traditionally, the committees just continue to function with the old membership until the members are replaced. The PNB also, in its first meeting after new PNB directors are elected, will spend quite a bit of time in the meeting electing officers for the new PNB. And the election for committee members is done, generally speaking, by email voting. So It could take quite a while for that to happen. It may not happen in the first meeting of the PNB. And there may be other that the new PNB has to take care of. So I would say that probably this committee, there won't be any new people on this committee until May at the earliest. That would be my prediction. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I think is going to happen. So I don't see any reason for us to suspend what we're doing. But then again, if we do, if there is a new committee formed sooner, I think that there'll be some holdover members. Some of us are going to continue on to the new programming committee. And we can volunteer to orient the new committee to what our past work has been and to continue it or, you know, address it with the new committee members.
Okay. So what you're saying essentially is that potentially this is not the last meeting of the program committee, unless I guess we choose it to be so. So is there nothing in the bylaws or the that would suspend the committee, or does the committee continue? Does anyone know if there's anything in the bylaws?
Well, is there a transition within the bylaws?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Generally speaking, the tradition is...
Jensen Stack.
I'm sorry, who's that?
Grace finish. Let Grace finish.
Let Grace finish.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Grace.
I believe that the tradition has been that committees continue to operate until the members are replaced.
Okay.
So they don't, so for instance, let's say somebody is termed out, their six-year term is up on their local station board, like Carol Travis is an example of that. Well, she's still serving on the national board, even though her term has expired on the local board. And she will continue to serve until she's replaced. And that's been the way that the PNB doesn't cease functioning until new PNB directors are seated. Continue to function until they're replaced. So I would imagine that seems to have been what's been done on the committees as well, in my recollection.
Okay. Ken?
It was Jim, actually.
Oh, Jim. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hear what Eric's saying. I know that I was reelected. I know that I want to continue working on this subject matter, and I hope that Kathy does too. So I think it's important to, you know, podcasting is podcasting, and it's going to be an issue for people 1 month away or 5 weeks away or whatever. The same with all the different issues we've been raising. And, you know, I just think it's worthwhile to just continue these conversations and wait till new people get formed at these committees and then just pass on the work. And yes, they decide they want to go in a different direction, the majority, that's fine. But I think also, you know, we have to, you know, just continue to probe on these questions and issues that have to do with reinforcing the content of the air. You know, that's the whole issue that I'm concerned with here. What's the content to make it better, to make it grab more people? And that's the ultimate source of the revenue. So that's, I think, is always important to keep discussing that in an intelligent way.
Okay. So we have two questions to answer. One is to motion to postpone this to the next meeting. And secondly, to determine what the next meeting would be. So... are there objections to postponing this conversation to the next meeting? Okay. I don't hear any objections, so we can postpone this conversation to the next meeting. And so my next question would be, can we agree on a meeting in 2 weeks' time? Or does anyone have? So that would be April 2nd, Tuesday, April 2nd.
I think that would be a problem in New York, because I think the LSB in New York is planning to meet on April 2nd.
Not the 10th?
I don't think the 10th. I don't know. I was just looking at some email. Whatever date we
Well, it's likely that there's going to be local station board meetings all over the place. So would you like to propose a date?
There's nothing so far on the 2nd, per the calendar. Just
just so you know.
Okay. So why don't we...
So this is Steve Fudd joining the call.
Hi,
Hello,
Steve.
Steve. Welcome.
Sorry, I'm late.
Good to have you. So I don't... the New York LSB doesn't it meet on Wednesday?
I think there's I got an email today about, I mean, I see we're scheduled to meet on the 2nd as it is, this committee. I can always unschedule it. My suggestion would be to do it on the 9th of April instead, because I think I got an email today to basically reserve a space for the LSB in New York to do that. So I'll double check on that.
Okay, so you're suggesting the 9th.
Yeah.
Isn't the PMB, the first PMB meeting is the 11th of April, right? Or is it the 4th of April?
No, it's the 11th.
So the first PMB meeting is the 11th. So it's likely that my recollection is that the whatever it is, why don't you put on the schedule the 2nd and the 9th?
Okay,
and then
we can
double check the local station boards.
Okay.
And then make an adjustment in time. Okay. Is there any objection to that strategy? So we're going to put the 2nd and the 9th on the schedule.
Correct.
But we're only going to use one of those dates.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So I would suggest that if we're going to kick it down the road to the next meeting, that we come prepared to actually have that discussion. So in the meantime, however, we do have some of these motions on the agenda of the PNB. Whether or not they will be gotten to, I don't know, but they are on the agenda. Two motions are on the agenda. One is the motion for the sample streaming for May Day. And the other one is the cultural motion that was passed. So those two are still on the agenda of the PMB, just as an FYI. Okay, so since we're not going to do this discussion now, I believe somebody can tell me otherwise, that we are ready for our presentation by our ED. Oh wait, discussion on bringing in experts was something that we didn't do, but kind of did. Did you have anything more you wanted to say on that, Jim? Bringing in experts.
No, I think we all agree on that. The question is,
okay.
I personally think that if we bring experts on down the road, I would like to create carts locally in each station so that the listeners can know that we're going to have these people talking about subjects, and they can tune into the stream, and then they can send their comments to some local, you know, they can comment on it or something like that. I mean, you make it into a streaming radio show, if you will, but just basically allow them to participate, to let them know, to use our terrestrial signal to let them know what's going on.
Maxie, to the stat.
Okay, Maxie?
Yeah, real quick on that note. I do think, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. This is almost a joke, but I'm in some respects, I'm serious. I think it's important that we update our terminology to get beyond carts. Jim and I... Look, you and I both know what carts are. Yeah, let's move beyond carts. We
I finally got the PDs and the GMs to move off that term when it came to the election stuff. But I'm just going to encourage us to do the same. You're right, announcements, promos, whatever, any kind of descriptive term, but carts are outdated. It's an outdated term. I hate for us to still be communicating that, especially in these public calls.
Okay.
All right,
thank you. We'll try to remember. Catherine for the stack. Who is that? Did someone want to be on the stack? Well, I also have an inappropriate comment to make about your suggestion that wouldn't it be wonderful to have some actual experts run for the LSBs next time, but that's just me. Our next presentation is you, Maxie. You're up. Apparently we're having a shirt meeting today.
Yeah, that's good. I will just add a little comment to what you said, and that's why I recommended to the board that we consider slotted LSBs, CABs, and PMB, then you would have expertise on the boards. It would be written in as part of the foundation of what we use as governing bodies. So anyway, I digress. Let me move on to my report for this committee.
Point of information, could you define slotting?
Yep. I've proposed this on a couple different calls with members of the board. The notion is that, and I'll give you an example. When I ran the community advisory boards in Cleveland and had some involvement in New York, but mainly ran the one in Cleveland, it was a slotted board. And what I mean by that is that we had done a demographic, geographic, and ethnic breakdown of the market that we served, and we made sure that our community advisory board reflected those elements. So if we were covering seven counties, let's say, with our signal, we made sure that we had representatives from those seven counties proportionate to our audience as it spread across those counties. We had gender breakdown so that we were, I think, 55% male, 45% female based on the market that we served. We had a certain ethnic racial breakdown based on the demographics of the communities that we served, with all the intention, obviously, that we would have people provide perspectives that were reflective of the larger community. The other key element to that is that we had a line that was slotted for professional background, and it included everything from attorneys to people who were in health, people who were in nonprofit, labor, you name it. You could go down a laundry list of different professions. And we made sure that every time it came term, when people termed out, we looked at who came off the board and what do we need to replace to maintain the representation that we are striving for. And so our board always consistently reflected that breakdown. And so that's what a slotted board would be. It would be us defining what are the professions that we need on our board to assist our stations at the local level, to be relevant at the national level. That could be activism, that could be labor, that could be people who know how to do financial record keeping, people who know how to do fundraising. Those are the slotted professions, if you will, we would say, and you would do it that way. So I could go into a lot more detail, but it's just guaranteeing that your board has representation that is actually useful and beneficial from a professional and demographic breakdown for the markets that you're serving. More on that
later. Thank you.
Okay, just a follow-up question, please.
Sure.
Well, how many people were on that board, and where did you get the money to get a room big enough to have them all participate?
Well, the building that we operated was big enough. We had 24 people on the board. So it wasn't that we were such a large body. It wasn't like we had 100 people or 50. It was 24 people who met quarterly and represented, again, that geographic, demographic, psychographic breakdown, if you will, professionally, that we were looking for in the market so that we had representation on the community advisory board. I'm recommending that for the LSBs. In addition to that, hoping that the LSBs trickle up to the PNB with that same breakdown of expertise, demographic representation, et cetera, obviously with five distinct markets, it'll look different at the national level than it would at perhaps the local level. But New York's LSB would really look like New York, demographically broken down. Houston's would be the same, as would Berkeley, LA, and DC. And so it's really about making sure you got the kind of representation that, that really brings the community forward. Consistent.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
This is Eric. Can I? I don't know if we have a stack. Can I respond briefly for about 35 seconds?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Matthew, I believe you said you were looking or hoping to get the same format on the LSBs.
Yeah.
You're probably where the LSBs are elected. The CABs, to a large extent, are appointed. So, I mean, we can't regulate who runs for office.
Yeah, no, I'm clear on that. What I'm really proposing is one of two things. Either it's a dramatic transformation of the way the LSBs are created. So obviously a bylaw shift, a transformative bylaw shift. Or we create a situation where people who are elected from their profession represent, they're basically being elected into slots. And so we have four attorneys applying for two positions. And so the top two attorneys would get those two positions. And that's
Academy,
how you would slot them.
The Academy Award.
I guess, yeah, you could look at that one. Absolutely. Yeah. So let me get to my report if I can.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Well, I'd like to say something about this. Kathy?
Who is this?
This is Jim.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. I hear you on that issue. And we're in New York City. So The amount of expertise of all types we can bring in is endless.
That's in every market we serve.
I have, in the past, gone out of my way. When I found people willing to do that, I brought them into the situation. Because we have so few people working in a management position. Okay, they're doing three or four jobs at once. The problem is that, and this is perhaps in New York, is that they have to deal with the culture of the station, which is not that easy for the average person to handle. And they also have to deal with the fact that their expertise, you know, can be respected. But then the question is the trickle-down effect that it can have through the whole population of producers and staff and LSB people, et cetera. And usually the LSBs, you know, can degenerate into like the best off Broadway you're going to see in New York for free that day. So until that changes, I have plenty of people that I could bring in with those kind of areas of expertise. And I have. The problem is to supply that and get beyond the negative stereotypes they might have about what they're getting themselves involved with, which is always wrong.
It's an excellent point, Jim, but here's my response to that. Having run a board, a community advisory board, having witnessed how they operate when it is slotted, what you find is that the political back and forth, the factionalism, all that disappears because people know that they're there because they actually bring something very tangible to the table. They are called upon by the station for the purpose of their expertise. So they actually feel really valuable in the equation, useful, and they know that they are making direct impact on the station. That's a very different equation than our current LSBs, whereas if you recall, when I went around and toured the stations and I asked the staff, are you able to leverage your LSBs to your advantage? The answer universally was no. Now, that's an indictment on the LSBs as they're formed. There are certainly, obviously, members of our LSBs who are extremely useful to the staff. But as a whole, the answer was no. And so all I'm trying to do is get us to a point where the LSBs become a real utility to our stations. We know that we have some shortcomings in terms of human resource, professional expertise on our staffs. It would be wonderful if we had LSBs that weren't made up because of a $25 membership and a popular vote, and factionalism leveraging relationships across the nation to make sure that certain people are on the ticket. What would be right. wonderful is if we had LSPs that literally could work with our business managers, our program directors, our general managers, and assist them on the local level to really move these stations forward in a tangible, functional way.
Right.
And I guarantee you, if we had slotted LSPs, this factionalism, this drama around dysfunctionality would be rid. It would be excused from our scenario. I can't guarantee it completely because you're right. There's the whole variable around some of the politics that are still sort of undergirding a lot of what we are about. And then you've certainly got a whole volunteer programming staff that has a spirit of its own. But I think there's a sort of division of labor, if you will, between a slotted LSB and or CAB that would allow them to operate in a tangible way outside of that fray. So,
well,
this is Grace from the stack.
I just want to finish reply. You know, I was the chair of the community advisory board, and there were 6,000 to 7,000 outstanding premiums. I know that my efforts with others reduced that quite significantly. And I had to mobilize a whole bunch of people to go in and do that. Now, I think what I agree 100% with you is that it's important to bring in outside experts who can sort of moderate, by the very presence of their expertise, can add a new flavor to how people are understanding the situation. And there are plenty of people in New York I know. I mean, I've not called upon them because of all the craziness. But I would be totally willing to do that because it's the kind of thing going forward that we need to do. We just have
to every market has
and do that.
Yeah, every market has the resources you're speaking of. We are in the we're in the optimal market space to work.
Right. And the people have goodwill. The people have goodwill too. That's the thing that's always
absolutely.
Been.
Absolutely.
Grace.
I hear you, Maxie, but I think that there would be this would be very difficult to persuade the membership and the local board members to go along with this for many, many, many reasons. Now, before I go into that, I don't even want to go into that. I would like to ask you this: whose job was it at your station in Cleveland to recruit those slotted board members?
Me. It was me as the station manager / program director. It was my role. And I did it for the whole company, which was beyond just the radio station. It was TV. It was a FM classical station and a children's service as well. So I did it for the entire company with the idea that we wanted to be psychographically, demographically, and geographically representative.
I assume that what you're talking about then, I'm sure it was quite time consuming for you to do that,
but
what you're talking about here is a general manager being the appointer of the board members. Is that correct?
No, because we have a voting situation with our LSB, which is, I know why.
No, I mean in Cleveland. Is that what you did? You formed, you chose the slotted board members.
Let me explain it. I recruited. I got a roster of people who agreed to do it, and then I submitted it to the station board to approve of that roster of individuals. And so that's how the process worked. But it
and was
not,
the station board separate from the community advisory board?
Absolutely.
Okay, and was the station board slotted as well?
No, they were selected.
Okay, and who selected the station board?
I don't know if I can give you a concrete answer. I'm sure it was a combination of the president and CEO, the chief operating officer, and members of the board who created a committee that would do that selection process. Very different than the Pacifica model, which is why any slotted board scenario would have to be involve an election process as part of the equation.
Okay.
Sure.
Even if this were possible to effectuate, by a change of the bylaws, that would not, it would not happen, even if there were agreement on it, a significant amount of agreement, it wouldn't happen for a number of years.
Well,
it wouldn't be that easy.
You could be right. You could be right. But what I will tell you is during my tour of the stations, and again, it was just the first time, but when I presented this concept, both to the staff, to the boards, and to the volunteer programmers, universally, it was accepted as a great idea that had real value because everyone knows that our LSBs are dysfunctional. There is madness in New York. They don't even talk. We've got two different units representing Houston. So we know that the LSB system that we presently have has some serious dysfunctionality to it. I won't go any deeper than to say that I think our membership, I think our staff, I think members of our boards are actually ready for transformational change. And I think many of us have gotten tired, have gotten weary of the same old routine resulting in the same results. And I think at some point, this organization has to say, you know what, it is time for transformational change. And we're a radical, revolutionary type of group of people. We should be ready for this more than anybody. And so to me, it's not a question of, is it going to be difficult? Yeah, it'll probably be difficult. It'll take some leveraging, some lobbying. It'll take some negotiating. Because, yeah, some of the people on these boards probably are in it for power. They're probably in it for reasons that have nothing to do with public service, nothing to do with the viability and the betterment of the station that they're serving. But if they do believe in that, if they really fundamentally believe that they're there to provide public service, to be leveraged for the benefit of the station and its work in the community, then I think they would say, you know what, this makes complete and total sense. It gets us away from what we're doing currently, which doesn't work, and it allows us to move in a direction that will really lift Pacifica and its stations to higher ground. And that's the universal goal we should all have. So I'm willing to fight the battle. I'll be looking for soldiers to do it with me if that's what it takes. But at the end of the day, you know, this is not something I'm going to force on us. This is something that I'll push. This is something I will suggest. And hopefully members of the board will take it up and say, you know what, we believe in this. This is legitimate. At the very least, Grace, what I will say to you is that we have to form community advisory boards at the local level to be CPB compliant. We should at least test the model there to see what it does, how it functions, and how successful we are at implementing that approach. If we like it there, then we can say, you know what, let's see if it works at the LSB level. And if it works there, then we can say, you know what, let's see if this can trickle up to the national board. At the end of the day, it's an experiment, but we should be willing to do that because, as I told the PDs today, at some point you got to get tired of doing the same thing that doesn't work. So that's my response.
Cliff to the stick.
Yeah. Cliff, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't hear much about what Pacifica supposedly stands for, pro-democracy, against war, and for human rights. To me, this should be the core of everything we do. In terms of bringing people in who reflect our community, I think the CABs, yes, should have representation from the different geographical areas that our signal reaches, but also from different sectors, like the homeless, like the people on public assistance, like construction workers, like labor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I hear nothing along these lines. I hear only about professional people being put on CABs. And I think that those are not the people who we're primarily directed from our mission statement to be going after. I really think that we should come from the ground up and build Pacifica along those lines.
Well, you make a great point, if I may say. There's no reason why a local station board or CAB should not reflect the diversity you speak about. If that's something that at the granular level we believe should be grassroots oriented, then you can create a community advisory board, an LSB, that reflects that diversity. I mentioned professional because that's what we did in Cleveland with a public radio station. However, if because of Pacifica's ethos, we decide that the makeup of our community advisory board, the makeup of our LSBs is grassroots and it's activist heavy, but also includes people who have professional expertise that can help the business of radio, can help us do the radio station operations in a more professional manner, but also have people who are lay folk who represent us geographically, demographically, et cetera, who can contribute to our understanding of the issues on the ground. I mean, you know, there are nonprofit people who you could put on this. There are people who work with homeless. There are people who are homeless. There are people who are low income. There are people middle income and high that you could put on this. You could slot for all of those factors. And that's the beauty of a slotted board, is it allows the local station to define its makeup. It is up to the local station to do that, not someone on high.
Tom was in line for
something. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
Well, what I want to say is that what we need is a proposal of how we would make that transition, given the current circumstances and the current bylaws.
Correct.
So, somebody needs to put together a proposal of how we would make the transition.
Yep, I agree with you. Jan Goodman and I have begun the process of writing this out. Doesn't mean we're going to get to a place that I think I may be aspiring to, but, you know, with Jan working with me to kind of articulate this, at least we'll have something to start with. I imagine she's going to make sure I don't get too out of hand with the initiative and what I'm proposing. I'm sure she's going to use some level of judgment based on her experience with Pacifica. But at the end of the day, it's good to have her working with me to at least play out a scenario that might allow us to move in a direction like this. And again, we may start with just the cabs, but I think that's the first step, and you're right. We have to do something. I did want to wait until after the elections, so that we could clear this hurdle. We've done it, and thank goodness. And now we'll when we present this proposal, it'll be to perhaps a new group of folks who may have a different vision for what can be laid, can be done ahead than perhaps folks who were in the previous groups.
Jim, to the
side. That's a good point.
Okay, Jim.
Yeah.
Anyone else that hasn't spoken yet?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I think I'm the only person on this call who was elected to a local advisory board that was the old structure almost 25 years ago. I think I'm the only person on this call who was elected to the program council at BAI. And so I have a deep, deep disrespect for an appointed process based on my experience back then. Now, where I hear you, Maxie, is on the need to bring in, and this is also in line with Cliff, you bring in the oppressed, you bring in the voice of the voiceless, and you bring in others. You create a popular front of different kinds of expertise, and you value that. You honor
yes.
that. And that's what doesn't happen. Now, I'm not in favor of appointed LSBs, because I saw where they sort of got caught up, and this is in a way reflective of, you know, what we're going through now, with the issue of strip programming 25 to 30 years ago, which caused the rebellion to emerge, which I was part of. Now, I don't have the same opinions I had 30 years ago. I see it more in a much more complicated perspective now. But I also know that Pacifica is an unusual place where there's a tremendous amount of freedom to do lots of things. The reason why I know when I was chair of the community advisory board, I brought 10 theater groups into the station to use space that wasn't being used to do their rehearsals, and that included the Occupy Wall Street Theater Group. And what were the benefits of that? It essentially got us a ability to get donated computers, which I probably could still trigger. I got 30 free computers, which unfortunately, I don't want to get into that over the phone. But I mean, there's all these benefits. And at the same time, the issue of the homeless and other issues, I totally agree with you on that, Cliff. That is a very essential part of what we have to respect. I also agree that expertise. We have a new situation now where we can do this. Now, the problem I have with how the people perceive the LSPs is I have a different perspective about how this has evolved or devolved than others, which I'm not going to get into on an open call. But I do think that some people from the start had no intention of having a 10 to 20 to 30 to 40% of each listener member in a percent of each listener member in each station participate. In fact, they have gone out of their way to delimit that process because of all the hocus-pocus nonsense that occurs. And ultimately, the hocus-pocus nonsense is has to do with very serious issues. That is, selling signals or not selling signals, swapping signals or not swapping signals. That gets used in how the public perceives that. But I do think have to have a mixture of opinion going forward, and that is a positive thing. I'm perfectly willing to start triggering the expertise in. I'm not in favor of essentially, reinforcing elite models, a creative guardian class within Pacifica where we already have people who think that they're that anyway. So I'm against the people
who
decide to reject that kind of ridiculous nonsense.
Yeah.
And they have spoken because they're not listening. Okay.
Yeah. Let me respond real quick, Jim. First of all, I've already acknowledged that anything I'm proposing will likely have an election process built into it because of the democratic values that we have, the desire we have for that process to be in pretty much all things that we do. So that's number one. The slotted arrangement just means that you're, as you said earlier, doing an award show approach to it, where you're basically determining, the slots you need. But again, the local station has the prerogative to define the wide spectrum of expertise and or experience that you want. And that experience can be a lived experience versus, an academic enabled or career embodied approach. So again, let's not conflate the two. All I'm talking about is a model that allows us to have a balance of professional expertise and representative democracy on our local station governance. That's really the key here.
Cliff to the stack.
Okay, Cliff, and then unless this is your presentation, Maxie.
It is not.
Let's make this the last. Go ahead, Cliff.
Just one short.
To the actual agenda, yes. Go ahead.
Just one short addition. I totally accept Max's belief that we should have professionalism in the station. My only overall point is that professionalism to make us better in terms of radio should be totally backing the overall existence of Pacifica and what it stands for. And we are an extremely unique network. There's nothing else like it in the United States. And we should see ourselves as pushing this country into the future, just as we've been pushing our country into the future since 1948 with the civil rights, with the women's movement, LGBT, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We are the guiding light, in a sense, in many ways, for the future democracy of our country. And any professional people who help us on the radio should be there to back that mission that we have.
I completely agree. And I think what you'll find with anyone who's a professional, they recognize that their role is to serve the larger agenda of the organization, regardless of their politics, regardless of their orientation. The bottom line is professionals know that their job is to see through the mission of the organization first and foremost. And so the good thing we have to our advantage is that there are a lot of progressives and liberals and radicals and communists and the whole lot bring great professional expertise and skills to the table. So it's not like we're fishing, in a dead river. There's a lot of great people who share the Pacifica ethos who are available in this capacity.
Catherine, sir, can I have about 2.5 seconds, please?
Very last comment on this topic, yes.
Yeah, I do a little bit of research for the news department here in Washington. There's a similar narrative coming out of Washington for Venezuela. I'll leave it at that.
I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's good or bad.
It is what it is. What it is. What it is.
It just depends on what angle you're taking on that one. So I'll leave that one alone. Yeah.
Okay. Max,
so I get
let's
to my
have your yeah, make your presentation, please.
I'll try to whip through it.
Since people were really looking forward to it, it seems.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I'll start in friendlier locations with this. Someone asked about the community advisory boards. I did talk to the PDs at a conference call with all of our PDs except for one this morning. We talked about CPB compliance. I gave them a website that they could use to learn exactly what the requirements are and how cabs are to be utilized in the station structure. I also talked to them in depth about the role of a PD with respect to the community advisory board, noting that cabs are independent body. Their role is to provide advice and to support research and other activity to support programming. But it's important for PDs to inform CAB members of programming efforts and engage them in community engagement work where possible. And I've seen that effectively done in both New York, Baltimore, and in Cleveland. So that's the model that I'm familiar with, that the PD's role is to actively engage the CAB in many of the ways that the general manager would want to engage the local station board. So I'll stop short and let anyone have a question about the community advisory board beyond that. But that's really what the conversation is about. I will just reiterate real quick. Only two of our five stations have community advisory boards that meet regularly that I would say fit compliance. And so this is an area of emphasis, not only with the PDs, but obviously the GMs over the next several weeks as we get our financials in order. Clearly, we want the cabs to be well-positioned as well, so the compliance should not be an issue moving forward. Another thing that I talked to the PDs about is the greater public membership that we have, that there are assets to that membership that they should be taking advantage of as well. There are pledge drive best practices. We know across the board that we could do better than what we currently do. And so Greater Public has a research-based understanding of the best practices throughout the industry of nonprofit media. And so a few of the PDs had already done some homework in this area and had nothing but really positive things to say about the webinars that they were attending. Some of the materials they were reviewing, and there are others who, interestingly enough, told me, and this is more to Jim, that they are so overwhelmed with their day-to-day operations that they don't know if they have enough time to do a lot of research and reviewing of webinars and things like that. And so what I told them very directly is that as we fine-tune our HR through the relationship with NETA, and really get into some serious evaluation processes of our professional staff, that their professional education, their continued education professionally, their professional development is going to be a key piece to that. As these tools become more and more readily available to them, they're taking advantage of that. It's going to be part of how they're evaluated. And so it would behoove them to move in that direction of industry standard and best practice, and finding ways to make that work in a Pacifica, in a unique Pacifica way. The last thing I said on that note was, if you're overworked and overburdened with things that aren't proving to be effective, it might be time for a reset. What better way to do that than to engage in an understanding of best practice so that you can be more efficient and effective with your work. So that was that. I told them about my meeting with Democracy Now! When I was in New York a couple of weeks ago, really focusing on an initiative that NPR did with its Morning Edition and All Things Considered programming called the Spark Project. I gave them some pointers on how to find out more about it, but I told them about how Bill Moon, who is the outgoing president of NPR, when he came in, instituted a voluntary promotion strategy for the most popular programs on NPR stations. We have the opportunity to do something very similar with Democracy Now!, which is the number one show on all of our stations. It's basically a 4, 5, 6 month campaign heavily emphasizing promotion of Democracy Now. When I met with Democracy Now, we spoke in detail about that. And so the next step is to put promos together and roll out a campaign as early as the middle of April, I'm hoping. And so that was something we talked about in depth as well. I also got into some operational matters with them. We talked about what I'm making mandatory, and that's quarterly meetings with the volunteer programmers. A lot of our program directors don't meet with their volunteers on any kind of regular basis. I think if you're going to create a culture within the station with your volunteers, you've got to meet with them regularly, make them feel like they're part of something bigger than the 1 hour show that they may do once a week. And give them a feeling like they're part of a larger organism, that benefits from them being there. And so it's a two-way street. We talked a little bit about that. I'm going to be doing a series of webinars breaking down some of these mandatory aspects that we're going to roll out for the stations. The other one is a mandatory adherence to creating standard clocks across the programming schedule. It's important that our stations be able to do business throughout the day, whether it's volunteer programs, whether it's locally produced station programming, or whether it's nationally syndicated programming. Having clocks and the ability to regularly schedule promos and other business is important for our stations to be able to do, and the only way they're going to get there is if they have clocks. And so I've made that another initiative that's mandatory, and we're going to set a timeline for that as well. And I'll be working with the GMs to make sure that everyone's in accord with these initiatives. We also, lastly, when I talked to them, talked about sound design for the station. And we talked about several syndicated programs and how they sound on our station. And do they sound like Pacifica? And we talked about everything from a show called The Jeff Santos Show to Rising Up with Sonali to Tom Hartman, Letters in Politics, and a whole host of programs. But the fundamental question is, does it sound like Pacifica? Does it sound does it sound commercial? Does it sound out of the norm in terms of the sound design you built for your station? And so that even the notion of sound design is a new concept for many of them. So we kind of explored that to some degree. A couple other things real quick. These are further affinity group conversations. As you know, we're members of Greater Public. I mentioned that before. We got a really good deal to become members of Greater Public, and I think as the stations start to take advantage of that asset, you're going to see a much higher level of professional quality in our professionals. And I also know that many board members are interested in looking at the material, reviewing it, attending webinars, and being exposed to best practices in marketing development and revenue centers. Well, there's another organization that I'm looking at called the Public Radio Program Directors. The value in this organization is all of their best practices are centered on programming. And as we recognize the need to improve our revenue centers, the same goes for programming. I'm also in negotiations with them on a group buy. I've gotten so far a quote that represents a phenomenal deal, one that obviously I won't talk about in an open call in terms of numbers for their sake and ours, but the bottom line is it'll allow our station to take care of, at a very nominal cost, programming best practices, the PD, program director's handbook, talk show handbook, the notion of creating core values, audience trends, many of the things Jim talks about on these calls. There's an annual conference. There's webinars, new and archived. There's hands-on advice provided. There's PD collaboration and shared skills, opportunities, and job postings. There's a whole host of things. And I'm hoping to have one of the representatives from PRPD present to the national board this Thursday, but that's something I'm working on and hope to have that built into the agenda coming Thursday. Last piece in terms of group buy potentials and opportunities is with American Public Media, which brings the BBC into focus. We've had this conversation before. It's very much in an exploratory position right now as we look at national programming, syndicated programming for the stations. One option, I think we have a clear pathway to own the BBC brand in the markets that we serve, but I'm exploring that. We're looking at what the group buy would look like, what the rate determination factors would be, what are the access points to digital content from the BBC, and what options currently are not being either utilized or maximized by NPR public radio, things like BBC Africa, which I think would play really well in Houston, New York, and D.C., and then also BBC Mundo, which is an online and on-air service exclusively in Spanish. We have had several conversations across all the markets about Spanish language programming. Imagine if we had a secondary service, whether it be HD or web-based, that not only had visual and text-based Spanish language content, but also the ability for us to insert local, all in Espanol. So that's the gist of my report. I can certainly do a quick Q&A if anyone has it, but those are some of the issues that we're exploring,
not only
with BBC, but others.